This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
And so you don't know whether or not your community sits atop, you know, an old field. And Los Angeles is a city that was built atop oil. And so the Abandoned Well Administration can not only be a place that meets need with need, but also has the kind of trained personnel to safely respond to these types of events, too.
For over 100 years, American land and waters have been tapped for that dark and viscous substance that has propelled our economy and generated the climate crisis. But oil wells don't last forever, and now approximately 3 million defunct oil and gas rigs sit idle in states like Oklahoma, Texas, Pennsylvania, and others. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to energy market analyst Megan Milliken-Bivin about her Lemons to Lemonade idea for the abandoned equipment and the people who used to work on them. She proposes a new federal agency that will oversee the millions of obsolete wells, many of which are seeping toxic stuff. We discuss the existing problem, outline the concept of an abandoned well administration, and discuss folding oil and gas workers right into the machinery of a Green New Deal economy. I'm joined on Sea Change Radio by Megan Milliken-Bivin. She is an energy policy analyst, and she joins us from Vienna, Austria. Megan, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
So you have a piece in Current Affairs, which is entitled The Wreckage of the Last Energy Epoch, Abandoned Wells and Workers. It's a really cool idea about injecting some hidden life into the oil and gas industry in a very climate-friendly way. Why don't you first kind of outline the basic thesis of the article?
Okay. It's about an issue known as abandoned wells, orphaned wells, idle wells, legacy wells. Oil and gas companies drill a well, you know, they stick a straw into the earth and they extract hydrocarbons. But once they're done extracting profitable hydrocarbons, be it natural gas or crude oil, you know, there's this hole in the ground. And most state, federal, and local governments require that companies fill in that hole, they plug and abandon the well. But there are many times when companies go bankrupt and they leave, the other term is orphan, those wells for you and me to have to pay or deal with the emissions or leaking hydrocarbons that affect groundwater and, you know, the local environment. And so this article kind of goes into how and why that happens. And it's not just, you know, these wells that are financially left for you and I to take care of. It's also the fact that even if a company properly plugs an abandoned well, this is still an engineered product with an engineered life. And engineered products will fail or have some kind of failure throughout their life. And even wells that were abandoned maybe even close to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, could have a leak somewhere along the whole well, and they could be threatening groundwater and, you know, or emitting methane. And so this article kind of goes into that.
You know, if I had read this 6 months ago, I think I would have looked at it through a much more fear-based lens, because we wouldn't have an EPA that's actually fighting for clean air and clean water in a more obvious way than we have now that the Biden administration is in place. How does one take this reality of all these orphaned wells and turn it into a net positive for the economy and maybe bundle it into some kind of a Green New Deal issue?
Well, I want to first contextualize for listeners that, you know, the thing that makes this especially pernicious and why it has developed to the scale that it is, because we're talking millions of wells. We're not just talking a few isolated wells. We're talking, you know, abandoned wells from, you know, the turn of the century in Los Angeles. We're talking wells, you know, on Louisiana's coast. We're talking in Pennsylvania and forest, Ohio, all over. And that is because state governments, tribal governments, different federal agencies all execute oil and gas leasing programs. And They all have their own requirements for bonding. That's the insurance that companies are required to hold in case they do go under. And they all have different requirements for what's considered idle or, you know, what's a productive life. And so as a result, you know, and this is, you know, throughout different administrations, because the EPA is not really the regulator of question in this situation. It's all of the different agencies I mentioned before. And, you know, Clean Air Act is something that operates under a cooperative federalist framework where it's actually punted to state agencies. You know, EPA creates the general rules, and then state agencies, who are often underfunded and understaffed, are the ones responsible for executing and implementing those rules. New Mexico, for instance, has something like 9 inspectors for an area that is, you know, twice the size of New Jersey, you know, thousands of wells.
And then if you look at like red states that are massive in the oil and gas industry, like Texas, that maybe I'm looking at it a little in too much of a sanguine perspective is what you're saying.
Yeah, because I mean, California has quite an issue too. I mean, it's not just it's places with hydrocarbons. Any state that has resources to exploit, the states have been part and parcel with that. And, you know, because state legislatures can be easily bought off and because state regulators can be easily underfunded and understaffed, you know, the industry, the oil and gas industry, has really stacked the cards in their favor. And they, you know, they play it in these like small little games across the country. And what my article does and what I'm trying to do is contextualize it as a national problem and one that could be a potential national solution.
Yeah. So what if it is a solution and bundled into a Green New Deal? How do you propose something like this looks?
Okay. So I've written actually legislation. So a little background for the listeners is that I previously have worked for the Department of the Interior for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. So this is actually kind of my wheelhouse in direct policy that I've worked on previously. And coming at this from that perspective and also understanding the onshore context, I've written a piece of legislation, the Abandoned Well Act of 2021. Contact your local representative and say you'd like to consider this being on the docket this year, which would create a new executive level agency that would directly recruit and employ displaced oil and gas workers who can do this work directly in 30 field offices. Have a whole task force of fence line communities, environmental justice representatives, and oil and gas workers themselves to kind of create a prioritization method for these wells. Because, you know, like I said, there's millions of wells, and this is going to be work that's going to take years.
Dive a little deeper into the employment issue here with the oil and gas workers, if you can. How much training does it take, for example, to transition from being somebody who's trying to find oil to somebody who's trying to handle plugging up a well?
So from the folks I've spoken to and the engineers and people who work on rigs, zero. It's just a lateral move. This is precisely why this is the moment to come up with an idea like this, because these workers wouldn't have skills that are necessary to do this work. You know, oil and gas companies do not possess this expertise. It's not your C-suite. It is the actual workers who have been fired en masse over the last several years. Because a little background is that, you know, there's this myth that the oil and gas industry is a great job creator. And indeed, that is the last bit of social license they have to operate, is that they are an employer. But if you look at the last few years, production in the United States has doubled. The shale revolution has allowed the United States to surpass Saudi Arabia and Russia in terms of production. But in that same period, production jobs have declined by 20% because the American-led global oversupply of oil led to a collapse in prices. And so for companies to maintain those profit margins that their shareholders crave, they have to cut marginal costs. And that has been in the form of jobs, in the form of oil and gas workers. And in the last year, it has been a complete cutting of workers, 118,000 Americans in 2020 alone. Those numbers keep rising. And it's to maintain that lean, mean, you know, operating structure. And there's a lot of rhetoric right now talking about how, you know, the Biden suspension on leases is going to cost jobs. But if you're looking for who's killing American oil and gas jobs, it's oil and gas companies. And so the legislation that I've written to create the Abandoned Well Administration would become that active employer for oil and gas workers, because we have this massive, you know, public hazard, you know, plaguing communities from coast to coast, you know, adding accelerant to wildfires in California, obstructing coastal restoration projects in Louisiana, which you know is near and dear to me, you know, literally blowing up houses and killing people, because this has happened. You know, in Colorado, there was a community that was built atop a, you know, an old oil field, and a gas pocket formed and exploding a house. And like, this has happened across the country where they just have leveled homes. And so you don't know whether or not your community sits atop, you know, an old field. And Los Angeles is a city that was built atop oil. And so the Abandoned Well Administration can not only be a place that meets need with need, but also has the kind of trained personnel to safely respond to these types of events too.
As I walk through this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is there only pain and hatred and misery? And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I wanna know. What's so fun about peace of an understanding? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to energy policy analyst Megan Milliken-Bivin. So, Megan, we were talking about your proposal for an abandoned well administration. In this current affairs piece, you ask some really germane questions about just trying to start out finding these wells. And let me read a paragraph here. You write, "There is no combined national inventory for the total number of legacy wells, orphaned wells, abandoned wells, inactive idle wells, and producing wells. There's no uniform nomenclature. There's no national or shared database. There's no monitoring system. We don't know where every well is located, and it will only get worse. After the shale industry inevitably collapses, how many wells will be lost to our records? How many homes will be built atop these ticking time bombs? Which water aquifers are at risk? How much are wells actually emitting? We don't know." So much of this work that you are proposing is fact-finding, and it's critical, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think, you know, you point to another side of this, is that it doesn't just require, you know, the technical expertise of oil and gas workers, but it just requires people, putting people back to work to literally walk fields with metal detectors, piloting drones. It just requires people working from home, reconciling spreadsheets for the Bureau of Land Management. You know, there's just a lot of grunt work to do. And, you know, this could be, like we always talk about the Green New Deal, like what was the original intention of the New Deal? You know, a lot of the work was to create necessary infrastructure, but in many ways it was, you know, intended to be make work. It was just about putting money in people's pockets. But we don't have to do that now. We have real work to do, and we could pay people of all kinds to do that.
And it's not just a one-time plugging as well. It takes constant vigilance from agents and experts trying to measure methane release and other type of potential leaks into groundwater, et cetera, correct?
Definitely. It's a great point to bring up because, you know, I think the industry has intentionally misrepresented the kind of liability these wells represent. I think they're more akin to nuclear waste in that they're not plug and done. You will always, on some level, have to monitor these wells because, you know, that hole doesn't just go away. The pressure can build up. And, you know, what is easier, building a desalinization plant off the coast of California or protecting existing water resources today? And the thing about the AWA is that, you know, while maybe certain technologies might be a little more cost prohibitive now, you know, this could be a place where you can build the technology and the monitoring equipment to scale. So you can drive down that cost, and it could be, you know, manufactured by our people and our, you know, this for the public good from the public purse.
So the EPA estimates that there's between 2.3 million and 3 million documented abandoned oil and gas wells spread across 27 states. And that emits about over 7 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, particularly methane. I'm assuming on an annual basis, that's a pretty wide range right there, which tells you they really don't know. 2.3 million to 3 million. Did you talk to anybody who had a quarrel with those numbers, or is that a fairly safe range to look at to start with?
So it's the jargon, guys, and this is something I get into in the article, is abandoned is a pretty catch-all term. Abandoned could mean that they are plugged wells, but they're talking about, you know, all kinds of wells that they know are emitting methane and other greenhouse gases. So that study is between 2.3 and 3 million. I have found other figures from the Department of Energy that puts that number more at 10 million, and that doesn't include offshore wells. And that includes, you know, all the legacy wells that have been drilled over a century of production. And that is from a paper, Methods for Finding Legacy Wells in Large Areas. There's a lot of numbers that are floating around because states have different databases. And of course, they have different amounts for their orphaned or abandoned. And that's precisely the point. There's too much variance. There's too much unknown. What we need to do is start creating the system and the expertise and the administrative capacity to find that out. You know, when you have literal ticking time bombs in communities, because that's what they are. Hydrocarbons are bombs. And so it seems to me that the prudent, you know, adult thing to do is to start determining what the actual scope is.
And do we know how many active wells there are?
I think it's something like 800,000 producing wells right now. I don't know exactly.
When a company goes out of business, what happens to their legacy wells? Is it just taken over by the state, or do they have some, is it part of like their bankruptcy settlement that they have to be investing some kind of assets into taking care of those or plugging them, et cetera? Where is the current system lacking?
Okay, well, the current system is a hodgepodge. You know, it depends on which state. It depends on, you know, which federal agency, because the rules vary. You know, I've said before, I worked for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and there is bonding requirement. That's the insurance policy that they're supposed to carry. And there's financial assurance requirements. And, you know, if folks want to learn more about this particular issue, I highly encourage you to go to carbontracker.org. I think it's .org. And they have a really good report, Billion Dollar Orphans. And they talk about the different respective state programs and, you know, the onshore liabilities, like what the differences between the bonding amount, so the insurance policy, and the actual cost to plug and abandon those wells. There's a vast gulf. And currently, you know, there's a lot of different processes for how it is handled. You know, like my former agency, you know, they just go after, if the company should have enough bonding, in the ideal case, they have enough bonding and the federal government can just collect on those bonds. It's like an insurance policy. It exists for the benefit of the government. In other states, you know, that well just sits for years until it explodes, until it, you know, obstructs navigation, until, you know, it leaks. That is how it is in most places. Now, under the Abandoned Well Administration, what we would like to do is not get to that point. We would like to, you know, assess which companies are in danger of failing, because we can tell based on, you know, the production curve. So the Abandoned Well Administration can determine which companies are insolvent. They can determine, you know, at what point is a company, if they don't have enough bonding, if they don't have everything in place, the AWA has a trigger to go in and take over these companies and operate them within a carbon budget to fund that well's own decommissioning, its own plugging and abandonment. There's a lot of like little wonky things I have in this bill to kind of avoid getting there. It's a very complex issue. And, you know, California apparently has a rule on the books, but it doesn't actually enforce it, where, you know, if a company goes under and leaves a bunch of wells, well, they figure out the cost to decommission, plug, and abandon those wells, and then they divide that amongst all of the active producing wells, so all the companies throughout California, and just send them a bill. You know, so it's like company A goes under. Well, okay, company B, C, D through Z all have to pay for the decommissioning. So you have to, the good actors, quote unquote, have to pay for the bad actors, which I think is pretty elegant, actually. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, as a Californian, you should encourage CalGEM to actually use that rule because I think it's nice. But the goal is to not get to that point and, you know, take over insolvent companies.
Speak out! You gotta speak out against the madness. You gotta speak your mind if you dare. Try to get yourself elected. If you do, you had better cut your hair.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to energy policy analyst Megan Milliken-Bivin. So, Megan, let's go back to the employment issue for a second. Walk us through the logistics of getting those employees from this bankrupt company back into the workforce, doing work that they're trained to do and helping the environment at the same time.
Certainly. So this would be a new federal administration. So these would be federal jobs. These would be full-time AWA employees, you know, perhaps under the Department of the Interior, perhaps, you know, its own separate executive level agency. And workers, you know, will qualify through the normal usajobs.gov process, but obviously be pushed to the front of the line because they have the necessary expertise and skills. And currently there are actually a lot of oil and gas related jobs that do happen in the federal government. You know, like I said, I worked for the Department of the Interior, and they had a lot of the white collar jobs, you know, your petrophysicists, your geologists, you know, your chemical engineers, all those folks who are currently working for the federal government. So it would be necessary for the Office of Personnel Management to classify new positions for your roustabout, your drilling engineer, and all those people who work out in the field. And it would be just like any federal job. They would report to their respective field office. And, you know, one thing that I think, you know, is really important and meaningful for this is that they would actually have the union, which they currently do not have. Federal employees have their own bargaining sectors, bargaining units, and they would have required training. You know, part of the bill, the National Abandoned Well Laboratory and Training Center. So, like I said before, you know, this having this kind of federal weight to develop monitoring technology, you know, could be centralized in a new national lab. But this also could be, you know, a state-of-the-art training center where these workers will be trained on a fairly routine and robust schedule to ensure that we don't lose people out in the field. You know, like I mentioned before, there has been an oversupply of oil and gas over the last 10 years. And one of the ways that these companies have cut cost has been to reduce safety. So the amount of workers that have been killed on the job in the last 10 years has been the same number as soldiers killed in Afghanistan during the same period. You know, really brutal and violent ways to go.
And that's not even taking into account the COVID-19 outbreaks that we've heard about on oil rigs, et cetera, right?
Exactly. And that's like, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Like, there's just all of this suppression about, you know, what is happening on these rigs. These people are isolated. I think people have this idea of these jobs as being particularly good. And I think culturally, like, you know, they mean a lot to the people who do them. They're doing something that is necessary. We all need energy. We all need to drive or transport ourselves. We all need to turn on the lights. And as it is now under our current energy infrastructure, that's crude oil, natural gas, coal. And these people, you know, they endure very tough working conditions for us to maintain our comfort and current status of life. you look at Deepwater Horizon, you look at the BP spill, and everyone remembers the liability hot potato that happened afterwards. Oh, is it Transocean? Is it BP? Is it Halliburton? And you think about these companies, and they're large enough and big enough to be vertically integrated. Why do you have like 10 contractors out there? Well, part of that is to diminish labor power, is to make sure that no more than a few guys on that rig can ever, you know, get together and talk about ever forming a union, ever, you know, muster up the courage or like the support to complain about safety violations, to complain that the work they're being asked to do is dangerous. And so I think the AWA is a much better proposition for these workers. They can still provide, you know, valuable services to their fellow Americans. They can put their skills, their talents, and their expertise to use, but in a way that is, you know, mutually beneficial, that ensures that their partners at home aren't worrying that they're just going to be another marginal cost on a spreadsheet, that they will be appreciated, and that their services will be recognized by the wider American community.
So, Megan, we've had people on Sea Change Radio before, oil and gas experts, talking about how these companies, these really large, well-capitalized organizations, need to ultimately be part of our solution moving forward. They're not just going to go away, but we need to engage them. How could an AWA, an Abandoned Well Administration, engage the oil and gas community so that they have incentives to participate actively in this program?
They can pay for their mess. They think that the AWA is going to clean up their mess because at a certain point, you look at the amount of wells that exist across the United States, and this is not like, you know, a quirk. This is not an unintended consequence. It's not a moral hazard. This is an intended, you know, business strategy.
Just these stranded assets are not just laying fallow. They're actually eating away at our clean air and water.
They're intending to leave this mess. They're intending to make short-term profits and, you know, socialize the losses. And for me to even consider engaging them at any level as a way to make this more politically convenient is ridiculous, because they have already ceded the last bit of social license they have to operate. They have fired all their workers. They have given that to the environmental community. They have given that to the labor movement. You know, the premise that they have to be engaged, that there has to be something in it for them. The AWA is a recognition that we need to put workers first. You know, the last year has been about handouts and, you know, paydays to oil and gas executives, to the C-suite, and to the shareholders, while the workers have paid the price. You know, you keep on seeing these press releases, got to tighten your belts. All that means is your regular worker is going to go home to have to foreclose their house. You know, is going to have to figure out how are they going to feed their family during a pandemic. You know, I don't see a political advantage to engaging or satisfying basically an international crime cartel. That's what these groups are. And I just don't see an advantage to it.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Abandoned Well Administration. Megan Milliken-Bivin, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jimmy Smith, Sharon Van Etten, and Ruthie Foster. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.